Welcome to In Context, WPKN's live public affairs show. I'm your host, Ken McDermott Rowe. You can hear In Context every Monday from noon to 1 p.m., except the first Monday of the month when WPKN's general manager, Steve, reports to listeners. Our website is incontextreport.com, and you can check us out on Facebook and see our videos on the In Context Report channel on YouTube. With me in the studio today is my fellow host, Gus Cantavero.
Hey, Ken.
And doing double duty behind the board is In Context Military Affairs commentator, Marshawn McDermott Rowe.
Good afternoon, everyone.
One announcement on our next show. That will be noon, Monday, November 19th. We will be joined by Stuart Rhodes, who is the founder of the volunteer organization Oath Keepers. Now, Oath Keepers is composed of soldiers, policemen, firemen, and other public servants who have pledged that they will not enforce unconstitutional orders. That would be orders such as one to arrest citizens under the new National Defense Authorization Act. And that should be very interesting.
And I think it's worth mentioning that that's in keeping with the oath that all soldiers and law enforcement make to the Constitution above all else.
And that's Oath Keepers on the next In Context on Monday, next week, Monday, November the 19th at noon. In today's show, we're going to discuss last Tuesday's election and its ramifications for the future of our country. And we want to know what you think, so we'll be opening the phone lines in a few minutes. But to get us started, Gus, let me ask you this. The exit polls showed that the number one concern of Americans was jobs.
Yeah.
Okay, with unemployment remaining high throughout his term, how the heck did President Obama get reelected?
Well, that is that's a good question, isn't it? It did seem to sort of defy some logic. My gut reaction is that Romney made himself so unlikable that it overshadowed the key aspects and key issues of the election. And Romney never really made himself clear, made himself known as to what his original what his original ideas were, what his platform really was about. It was just broken down to jobs and the economy. He had no original thought on any other issue when it came to the war. It was it was very hawkish.
Yeah, the foreign policy debate was really not a debate.
No, it was ridiculous because Obama has the inside track on all the foreign policy information, so it's almost like he can just say, "Hey, look, trust me on this one."
Right,
and
right.
People are just going to be like, "Well, he is the president," you know.
And on the domestic side, when you look at Romney's economic program, it was really Reagan-esque trickle down. I mean, it was just cut taxes.
Simplistic.
Cut taxes on higher income people.
Yeah.
Deregulate business and everything will work out fine.
Yeah, it'll be fine.
And there's more to say on the subject than that.
Yeah, I know. It's almost kind of like he was expecting that people weren't intelligent enough to understand the answer. He could be right, but especially with most of the people that I come in contact with, it seems that everything is broken down to, again, such simplistic, sophomoric explanations where they just say, just cut the taxes and more money will come in. And I'm like, no, it's a little bit more complicated than that. You have to actually give the contracts to the small businessmen. You have to allow people to keep their wages, you know. And Gary Johnson, he really had fully thought out explanations on all of these issues, and it's really a crying shame that he wasn't given a national stage
to speak on.
Because when it comes to stuff like the income tax, and he wants to go to the national fair tax, right? Just a national income tax. So the more you consume, the more tax you spend. So if you don't want to consume and you just want to save your money, then you should be allowed to do that, especially in a time where the Federal Reserve is artificially keeping interest rates down below 0%. So when you save your money, even a good interest rate right now is a half of a percent. So where does that leave someone like me to be able to scrape together, you know, a couple thousand dollars and try to put them in a savings account, and you get nothing for it? Over the course of a couple of years, you might be able to buy a latte.
That's,
you know,
right.
So you need to be able to save your money and not have it pilfered by the federal government spending on things that you don't even want them to spend it on.
Well, the way it looks to me is we are headed for a continuing decline in our standard of living in this country.
True.
And we need some significant change. As we said before, what holds America together? I think it's two things. It's a high value for individual liberty, and it's also the prospect of economic arise, the chance for you to do better, for your children to do better than you did. And the country is not delivering it today. In fact, what I see happening in the next 4 years, and I don't blame this just on Obama, it's been building up a long time, is the standard of living is going to go down and down and down, and maybe for the whole decade. Mm-hmm. And we need, and you mentioned Gary Johnson. The people who with the fresh ideas, like Gary Johnson, who was the Libertarian Party candidate, you look at the party platform, the Green Party, they had some very original ideas. Ron Paul came up with some very important ideas. Mm-hmm. And they never get out there. And we had this discussion on election night with Congressman Dennis Kucinich. And he drew the analogy that the presidential campaign was like watching two football teams play an entire game within their respective 40-yard lines. Mm-hmm. And I thought that said it pretty well, because we never get the whole range of options. Gary Johnson has some interesting ideas. Ron Paul came out with a specific budget. We interviewed his national spokesman. He came out during the campaign and said, here is exactly how I will balance the budget in 4 years. That should have been the centerpiece of a discussion. And the Green Party has said, we got to get rid of corporate personhood. Mm-hmm. Never mentioned during the campaign.
No, instead they keep the confines to this tiny little fishbowl, and everybody is restricted to thinking within that bowl. They never get a chance to think about the problems from a different angle. Life and politics is three-dimensional. It's not one-dimensional or two-dimensional the way that they try to make it. They try to make everything seem so simple, like checkers, when everything is more like 3D chess. The answers are sometimes off of that paradigm that you're restricted to. So thinking about our economic problems, it's not just between conservatism and liberalism or socialism. There are other ways to think about things, like a national investment in infrastructure, which was never mentioned during the campaign on either side.
And it's absolutely critical. And if we look at American history, and we have reviewed it on previous shows, the notion that the government has to get out of the way in all respects with respect to growing our economy is absolutely wrong. Since the beginning of this country, from both sides of the aisle, whether it was Alexander Hamilton and his report on manufacturers back in the Washington administration, or people like the Cumberland Road of Thomas Jefferson, the Erie Canal, a Democrat, DeWitt Clinton, and then you had, of course, the greatest builder of infrastructure in American history, the first Republican president of the United States, Abraham Lincoln. That was the hallmark of his career, and Transcontinental Railroad, the public grants to created our state college system. This is the backbone of our economic growth. So the government has a big role to play when it comes to major infrastructure that's going to lift this country.
I mean, there are certain things that you like antitrust laws, okay? That'd be a great example of government interference for a good thing, right? It prevents monopolies because you need competition for a free market to work. So you have to have certain regulations in order for free markets to work. And it was Rockefeller who said competition is a crime, right?
John D. Rockefeller sounds like one of the greatest enemies of competition, right?
Exactly. And the question, he was the richest man on the planet. He had $1 billion at the time. And the question was, how much money is enough? And he said, just a little more, just a little more. Right, and he went on to say that competition was a crime, and they colluded between he and the who was the other group? Of course, his company was Standard Oil, and they monopolized and colluded to drive up the price of oil by sabotaging supply lines in Eastern Europe, where they had found massive oil wells. Instead of fighting over them and allowing them to enter the free market and drive down the price of oil, they just sabotaged it, blew up the pipes. Right.
So I think that's a really good point. The Republicans claim that they're always for business, but they're really for monopoly business. They give a lot of aphorisms, a lot of platitudes about small business, but really what the interests they seem to represent are those of monopoly capitalists and not real free enterprise.
And so whenever people, especially on the left side of the aisle, come out and say capitalism is the problem, like the Occupy Wall Street crowd especially, they'll come out and say capitalism is the problem, capitalism doesn't work. Michael Moore says capitalism doesn't work and it's the problem. It's not the problem. It's the fact that we have monopoly capitalism. It's that we have crony capitalism. That's going to occur no matter what you do to try and socialize things, because power is always going to rise to the top. They're always going to try and collude and centralize power, because that's where those kinds of scum go. They gravitate towards government.
Well, look at China and the Soviet Union. I mean, what was the first thing that happened when they took power? They immediately centralized all the means of production into one oligarchy. Mm-hmm. So granted, they weren't privately owned, but they were still owned by an elite clique. It was just a different elite clique than the ones that owned it before.
Right, the workers' paradise where everybody gets a job, whether you like it or not. You know,
exactly.
And instead of everybody being equal, you know, comrade, we're all of equal status, some are more equal than others, and they get to move into the mansions.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
And that's Animal Farm all over again. You know, they just rewrite the rules to say, you know, humans bad, pigs good, two legs bad, four legs good, and four legs good sometimes, and two legs can be okay too, and clothes shouldn't be worn except for by the pigs, and only the pigs can live in the house, right?
Yeah.
So they just continue to change the rules of the game to confine everybody's thought paradigm, to keep them thinking in a box, to prevent them from ever thinking of another possible solution to the problem, like healthcare.
Sure. Well, healthcare, they didn't have an intelligent debate about healthcare. They, of course, Obamacare was criticized by Romney. And in fact, I think the polls show that a majority of Americans want it repealed. But they never talked about what's the root problems with America's healthcare.
Or what do we replace it with?
What do we replace it with? We spend almost a fifth of our GDP on healthcare. They never mentioned it. Well, that is absolutely unsustainable. It's almost double what Europeans spend in their system. And we have something like 50 million people who are without health insurance at least part-time of the year. So we have to dramatically lower costs. And to do that, we have to look at our nutrition program in this country,
right,
which 80%, I understand from the Kaiser.edu, which is a healthcare big healthcare study group, that 80% of expenditures on healthcare in this country go for chronic illnesses. And I'll bet that a lot of that is related to our debased diet, which has been foisted on us by these multinational food firms. And,
yes.
And firms like Monsanto that are feeding us GMOs and food that's laden with corn syrup. And if we're going to lower our healthcare costs, we've got to attack the problem of nutrition.
Yes.
And I think second, the way we deal with healthcare, this allopathic approach where everything is about drugs and surgery, and of course the drug companies have been making out like bandits in this country.
Yeah.
That's what they should have been talking about.
Yeah. And by the way, if you just joined us, you're listening to In Context on WPKN 89.5. I'm Gus Canavero here with my co-host Ken McDermott Rowe, and behind the board, Marshawn McDermott Rowe. And I think that just goes to show how foolish and simplistic our political conversation is in this country, because Bloomberg got a lot of headlines by proposing that the soda ban, right? To restrict the size of the portion that you can drink. They limit it to, what was it, a 16 or 20 ounce, one of those things?
Yeah.
I think it was a 20
ounce.
It was
to restrict the consumption of these sugary sodas.
Exactly. Now, the root of the problem there is not just sugar, it's not calories, it's the high fructose corn syrup, which causes your body to want more. It fools it into thinking it's not full. It's an empty calorie. It has no fat coming with it or anything like that. There's no nutrition at all in it. It's an empty calorie. It's high fructose corn syrup made in a laboratory, not harvested in a field.
And it's in almost everything that's packaged.
It's almost in everything. And high fructose corn syrup is the problem. It is the cause of the diabetes. It's not just sugar. But there's an economic cause of government interference. A government interference cause for the economic reason to produce high fructose corn syrup. I'm sorry, I'm stumbling. But originally there's tariffs on imported sugar to protect the cost of domestic sugar, right? To protect the income of sugar farmers in the United States, domestic sugar. And that made domestic sugar too expensive for people to buy. So instead, they created an alternative, which was high fructose corn syrup, which they made in a laboratory for pennies on the dollar, what you could buy raw sugar for. And because it was so cheap, and because it's just oh so tasty, it's in everything. And it's a cash crop. They make money hand over fist from high fructose corn syrup. That is the problem. If Bloomberg got on television and said, the problem is this nutritionally deficient and dangerous high fructose corn syrup, which is causing the diabetes epidemic in this country, everybody would probably get behind that. But instead, he just says it's a soda ban.
I think that there is really would be widespread support for reforming the way our nutrition system, but getting it in front of the people. How the heck do you do that when the major advertisers are people like Monsanto? I mean, hey, they got this, apparently this proposition defeated. Monsanto got this GMO labeling proposition defeated in California. I was astonished because it has to be, you'd think there'd be almost unanimous agreement that it's reasonable to have GMOs in foods labeled.
And you're talking about Proposition 37 in California, right? That was narrowly defeated. But it's a proposition they put on the ballot. It's just a simple up-down vote. Popular vote gets it. And it was yes to label products that contain genetically modified organisms, or no, leave it alone. And the no crowd, funded primarily by Monsanto, used extremely deceptive advertising. The margin of defeat for this proposition was only 500,000 votes. In the size of a state like California, that is that's not a lot of votes.
I can't understand why anybody would vote against labeling.
And there was only 1.6 million. Uncounted absentee ballots after still left over to count, but because it was declared failed,
the Secretary of State.
I always forget that word. The Secretary of State.
Well, you're thinking of Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, I know. The Secretary of State said it was optional to count these ballots. And right. That seems absurd to me, because before that vote took place, it was polling 2-1 in favor.
That makes me wonder whether the count was honest, because it's hard for me to believe that people would vote against labeling. What would be the reason that you would not want to know what's in your food?
Exactly. I mean, they said that, you know, it would drive up the cost of food, that farmers didn't want it. They even said the police didn't want it. They fraudulently used the FDA seal on their mailers. You know, they violated a lot
of laws.
So
they scared people with a heavy TV advertising campaign. Yeah. You know, that brings up the issue of we look at both sides of issues on In Context. We look at the libertarian side as well as the progressive side. We're not Democrats or Republicans. But when it comes to interfering with your personal liberty, people seem to think it's wrong that they should be
told.
And
you're right to know.
It's wrong for the government to say, you shouldn't have this corn syrup throughout your food. That's my right to eat corn syrup. But what about your right to be free from wiretaps by the government? It seems like there's kind of a misallocation of what freedom is. I mean, I worry about, and this is an issue that should have been discussed in the campaign, the President of the United States personally approves assassinations.
Yeah.
What the heck kind of country
is
this?
And that's never brought up in the election,
is it?
This
is craziness. Or the extensive use of drones. Thousands of people just in Pakistan have been killed by American drones. Thousands.
Yeah.
Many of them innocent people, including children. I said, these things our government shouldn't be doing. Yeah, I don't have any problem with the government saying you can't eat half corn syrup in food, or the GMOs have to be labeled. But I do have a problem with our president as having people assassinated.
And you know, the Republicans want that power just as much as the Democrats do. That's why the whole two-party system is a complete sham. Ron Paul was silenced in the debates, and then during the convention, he wasn't allowed to speak because Romney's people would have had to write his speech for him, and he said no. And, you know, Ron Paul spoke out against the drones, the wiretapping, the war, the illegal wars, all throughout the campaign and the debates. And, you know, that was something that was very wildly popular with Republicans, but then was not integrated into the final platform. You know, instead, they just made it about the Obamacare and the economy. But I think it just goes to show that the Republicans desire that power just as much as the Democrats do, and shows that they're really a hydra of, you know, they're just multiple heads of the same beast.
As Ralph Nader says, it's one monster with two heads.
Exactly. And you know, George Bush brought us the indefinite detention, the wiretapping, the drone warfare, and President Obama expanded it exponentially because he had left cover. He was able to do it from this loving liberal angle and say, I'm going to lovingly murder Libyans.
Isn't it amazing how he has gotten a free pass from, for say, anti-war groups? As we interview them occasionally on PKN, I'm amazed that they're not furious at him. But he's gotten a pass, I guess, because he's a Democrat, and that's okay. But I was hoping a Democrat, a peace Democrat, might challenge him in the primaries, maybe a Dennis Kucinich.
Right.
Somebody who would get up and say, this guy does not stand for what the Democratic Party's bleed for. I mean, after all, you had Eugene McCarthy and Bobby Kennedy, who had seats in the Senate, risked their seats in the Senate to challenge Lyndon Johnson. But nobody stood up to challenge Barack Obama, and I think that's a real shame because so we didn't get a chance in the Democratic side to have a debate on the war.
And you know, I think Romney, for all intents and purposes, is really a moderate Democrat. He's not a conservative Republican.
That's ironic, isn't
it? As governor of Massachusetts, and before he was governor, and after he was governor, he stood for a lot of Democrat principles. You know, on climate and on abortion, on healthcare. He practically wrote Obamacare. It's just that it's from a state level. And,
right.
And his argument is that the Affordable Care Act is right only under state's authority, which, okay, fine. I'm a libertarian. I agree with that. I agree that you do have authority under the state to implement something like that, and you really can't do it on the national level. But from the principle aspect, he was really in agreement with Obama.
I agree. I don't think he would
everything.
There would have been very little difference, despite all the a lot of people. Oh my God, we can't have Romney as president. I don't think there would have been much difference. I think I think it would have been Massachusetts Governor Romney who we would have seen as president.
Totally.
I think the guy we saw during the campaign was the Romney that needed the Republican nomination, so he had to appeal
exactly.
To
That's why Paul Ryan crowd. Became the vice presidential nominee. It was to bring in that base, to bring in the people. Who he was going to lose if he went to the general election running as Governor Romney, right?
Mm-hmm. That's
you know,
right.
Because then the Republican Party would really be fractured. They would lose 20% of the vote. They probably wouldn't vote at all, you know, because they're not intelligent enough to say, well, I'm going to vote for the Libertarian candidate, you know, because they've been trained that that's a waste. So they'll just stay home.
That's right.
You know, it's so ridiculous. And I was talking to someone yesterday. And I said I voted for Gary Johnson, and he's like, yeah, you know, it's just too bad that your vote didn't matter. And I'm saying when I asked him what he thought, he said, oh, I really like him. And I was like, why didn't you vote for him? He's like, well, because then that's a vote for
Obama.
Yeah,
that's right.
Hey, look, man, there's 30% of Democrats who probably agree more with Johnson than they do with Obama.
That's right. That's
and there's 30% of Republicans who probably more agree with Gary Johnson.
I think that Ron Paul and Dennis Kucinich, Gary Johnson, they have much more to offer this country than the two mainstream, the corporate party nominees we get. You would be better off with either the progressive or the libertarian, the independents, than the guys we get who are looking out just strictly for
the corporations. It's just such a self-fulfilling prophecy for everybody to think at the same time, well, I don't want to be the only one to break rank.
Let me bring up another issue that was really important that wasn't mentioned at all during the campaign, and that's nuclear energy.
Yeah.
I mean, here was Fukushima, fish that are radioactive cesium are now being caught off the west coast of the United States.
Isn't that pleasant?
And meanwhile, Obama is backing, get this, $8.3 billion in loan guarantees for two new nuclear plants in Georgia. Can you believe that? It doesn't got much publicity and certainly wasn't brought up during the campaign. $8.3 billion in federal loan guarantees to do two new nuclear plants.
Yeah.
Fukushima is the current estimate now was just released from Tokyo Electric, $125 billion. $125 billion is that would then now think the cost of the cleanup of that nuclear disaster. There are contaminated fish off the coast of California. The TEPCO, the Tokyo Electric, has been nationalized. Okay.
Oh.
So this is basically the public has to assume the risk. When the nuclear industry screws up, the public or a natural disaster happened, you and I have to clean up. So why isn't there a big debate on whether we should get back into nuclear construction? This hasn't been happening here for many years.
And, you know, that's a very loaded question, especially because there's a second layer to that problem. Not only are our nuclear power plants outdated and most of them leaking and inefficient, but they're also unshielded from electromagnetic pulse weapons and solar radiation pulses. So if we had a solar flare and it was of an X7 class, I believe, and it sent off a portion of the power grid, we would have dozens of nuclear power plants spinning out of control, melting down at the same time.
Is that or an EMP bomb?
An EMP bomb or a solar flare of, I think, an X7 or greater class, which is a bad one, but it could definitely happen.
And they couldn't be shut down.
And they wouldn't be able to be shut down, especially not all at once, because you would need to have power to control their shutdown. It takes a day and a half to shut down one of these plants. They have to step them down slowly.
Why would we live? And we don't know what to do. Even if there isn't an accident like that, we don't know what to do with the spent fuel.
Exactly.
There's no place to put it.
We store them next door or on top of it, like they did in Tokyo. And especially when there are alternatives that are less dangerous and more efficient and cheaper, like thorium. But that's never discussed. Thorium salt exists on every continent. Every continent in the world could have microthorium power plants existing where we have coal plants right now, producing by magnitudes less emissions, more efficient power, and done
is
more cheaply.
Is thorium something you burn like coal, or does it have to be in some kind of special reactor like nuclear energy?
It's like a nuclear reactor, but it's much smaller. And it's based on a thorium salt reactor. And when the when they do shut down, there's no more reaction left to keep that to keep the heat going.
So
it cools itself down.
So like with uranium, you're taking some substance and you're breaking the atom up and you're releasing energy.
Well, yeah, that's over my head.
Oh, okay, but in any event, it's closer to a nuclear reactor than it is to just burning
coal.
It's
not
and oil.
Burning salt, right?
Okay,
it's a reactor, but it has built-in safeguards because it will not overheat to that point. Once it does spin out of control and you've lost power to the containment,
right.
It then just melts through its pan at the bottom, and then the reaction stops.
As opposed to this China syndrome where the thing keeps going
on and on. You can't cool it, and
they just
impossible.
Keep pouring water over it in Japan, and what happens with the water? That gets contaminated.
Yeah.
So now they have a huge problem over there with all of this water that's contaminated and don't know what to do with it.
Exactly. Yeah. And the fact that we don't ever have this discussion, we limit everything to, they give us a false alternative like green energy. You know, I think that you should diversify as much as possible. You should have maybe 15% of your power of the country coming from green energy, where it makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, locally, solar panels on houses producing 10% of their own power, commercial buildings with some windmills on top producing enough power to light the fluorescent lights, things like that to diversify. So when you have an outage, hey, you still have lights.
Well, maybe it's Obama says he wants green energy, it may be disingenuous.
I think so.
What's he really doing? He's giving $8.3 billion to the nuclear industry.
Yeah.
And the rest
of that's not green.
And what did he do? Solyndra, and I think solar power is great and we should be pursuing it, but that looked like a political payoff to friends.
For sure.
Because the money just went for naught.
And, nuclear power, okay, it doesn't have the emissions of coal and therefore it's green when it could kill millions of people with meltdowns?
How is that green? It seems to be insane. If you just tuned in, you're listening to In Context on WPKN 89.5 in Bridgeport, streaming at WPKN.org. My name is Ken McDermott. I'm here with my fellow host, Gus Cantavero, and our military affairs commentator, Marshawn McDermott. We're on every Monday from noon to 1 p.m. with Live Public Affairs and Talk Back, and we will be opening our phones now. Why don't we give out the phone number, which is 203-336-9756. That's 203-336-9756, or you can drop us an email to ken@mdrtalk.org. Do we have that open? Can we get that open? ken@mdrtalk.org.
Yep.
And if you'd rather not speak on the air, we can read your comment or your question right on the air because we'll get it right here in the studio. But the phone number, again, if you want to speak to us live on air, is 203-336-9756. What is your take on the election? Are you happy with Obama's reelection? Are you worried about the future? What are your concerns? Are you in a difficult situation with the job market? Do you feel that if you have a job, what you're making is covering less and less every year? What do you think we can do about it? We'd like to hear what you think on these subjects.
Yeah, there were so many issues that were never covered, like inflation. All right. We have the Federal Reserve, and Gary Johnson wanted to end the Federal Reserve. He wanted to end...
this is the Libertarian
candidate.
The Greens had the same position on
exactly.
that. Exactly. And the Fed.
And the reason why is because the Federal Reserve allows the country to spend more money than it takes in and operate in deficit in perpetuity.
It also concentrates power in those large private banks that own the New York Federal Reserve, which most people think it's a government agency.
It isn't.
It's a private corporation, and it's owned by Chase and Citibank and the really big banks.
Right.
And you got to believe they're looking out for number one, and the bank bailout is prime exhibit where trillions of dollars has been created by the Federal Reserve. And where has it gone? It's gone to fill the bottomless pit of the bank's losses. And you and I never see the benefits of this.
Now, how about... people want to talk about taxes. They talk about the Bush era tax cuts for the wealthy, which I don't even believe are wealthy. The $250,000 in Greenwich is not wealthy. And how about a tax on derivatives or high-frequency trading?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, the whole derivatives thing is a sort of Damocles hanging over our economic lives. I mean, I've seen estimates that it's something like the total derivatives value, that what they call the notional value of the derivatives market, and these are just basically bets on other investments from which the banks have made huge money in commissions.
Yeah.
But the total value of this, like 30 times the GDP of the entire world.
Mm.
So as this thing goes bad, and
it's unbailoutable.
It's unbailoutable. And I think that's where the trillions are going. And it started, of course, with the collapse of the real estate market, because those mortgages had been bundled and a lot of them were unsound and they were resold. And then these derivative instruments were created in great number, which then magnified the collapse in the real estate values.
Yeah, you know, and everybody focuses on the bank itself, right? But it's the individuals at the bank who are pulling in the profits, right? They're pulling in their bonuses and their fees on making trades, right? That's how they make their money. So of course they're going to act in collusion under the cover of the company.
So, that's right. So even though these instruments have no economic purpose, they can make a lot of money creating them, buying them, selling them.
Right.
And they did. And they had the party. And now we're you and I are paying the bill.
And high-frequency trading and derivatives, if you had a split percentage tax, you know, a tax of a split of a percent on trades, then you would be able to fund our national debt and all the problems in this country easily. And you would stop and start to curtail some of the economic woes that we have.
Guys, I think we have a call.
Okay.
Yes, we have a caller. This is Rich from Brookhaven. Go ahead, Rich. You're on the air with WPKN.
Hi, Rich. Ken and Gus here.
Hi. I wanted to... I guess I'm sort of a leftist Democrat, but I have to say in my neighborhood, which is sort of a... used to be middle class, now it's polarizing into the rich and the poor, I guess like every place else.
Uh-huh.
I noticed there's a lot of people who really, in a very strong way, support libertarianism.
Uh-huh.
And in other words, like, they'll look, middle class or upper middle class intelligent people will say, child welfare, we don't need that. Fire safety, that's outdated. Have clean water, that's up to you to figure it out. Mm-hmm. Public schools, I don't send my kids to public school. I send my kid to parochial schools. I'm not paying for that. Public libraries, who needs that? Minimum wage, that's outdated. It's all up to you. It's the individual. Fire department, well, you know, pay for it. If you're not paying for it, they shouldn't come.
Rich, do they also address issues like, I know Ron Paul during his campaign,
yes,
for example, was very strong on civil liberties against foreign military intervention, which does nothing for the American people. He's against the wiretapping of individuals,
yes,
and that sort of thing. Do they focus on those issues, or are they the people you talk to just focusing like, let's not have any government services?
Well, I think pretty much that, you know, I think folks that who say this have this idea that taxation is theft.
Mm-hmm.
In other words,
yeah,
like that all the taxes is their money. So in other words, like basically, and you would think that what I'm saying is like a lunatic.
Well, no, it sounds like affluent people who don't want to pay for other people.
It's almost like the thing is, if you're blind, it's your fault. If you had a retarded kid, that's your fault. I mean, it's not my fault. You should, you know, have the church take care of it, or you should
have
had a kid.
I think that, thank you very much for calling,
Rich. I mean, I know that sounds extreme.
No, I think a lot of people
I just find it really frightening, and I know that like in Tennessee about a year ago, they had this thing where the people didn't pay the fee for the fire department, and then they had a fire, and the fire department just didn't come.
I mean, that was a result of complete poverty. They just didn't have any money to pay for it anymore.
But I'm just saying, there's something
that wasn't like a choice.
No, I understand that, but I'm just saying. To me, I think this stuff is incredibly scary.
No, I understand. We thank you very much for the call. I personally don't know any libertarians who believe that we don't want a fire department anymore. But I thank you very much for the call. We have to jump to another.
Yeah, thanks, Rich. We have another caller?
It would help if I turned up my mic.
Yeah.
Our next caller is from Bridgeport. Go ahead. You're on the air with WPKN.
Hi. There was a cute comment. There are things I disagree with you about, but the main point is,
uh-huh,
you guys are reasonable and balanced. You know,
thank
not
you.
Like you're just extreme
you
in one direction.
Yes. We try very much to be.
And that's the craziness. And I wanted to relate a little story.
Uh-huh.
I was mentioning to some friends about, you know, how terrible it is. They lock people up in indefinite detention secretly.
Uh-huh.
And the other thing was, you know, the use of drones to kill innocents.
Yes.
And people would say to me, you're against the woman's right to choose. So what do you mean? He says, well, if you say anything against Obama, that means that abortion will become illegal.
A lot of people are one issue voters.
And I'm also not sure how that happened, because as governor of Massachusetts, I really don't like Romney. Romney was pro-abortion. You know, there's really no reason why to think that Romney would become all of a sudden this like staunch Catholic priest as president of the United States. How do they get this?
I guess it's because of the one issues, and it's really frightening. And, you know, we're going to lose our freedoms if we care about only one issue.
That's true.
That's right. And I think that, what do you think of our notion that Obama's kind of gotten a free pass on the civil liberties issues and on the expansion of the war?
Well, exactly. If Bush used the drones the way Obama did, or just killed people on the street for, you know, because he thought they might be a terrorist.
Uh-huh.
I mean, everybody would go crazy. But with Obama, he's given a complete pass, and it really is disgusting. I mean, when the Republicans voted Obama the right to secretly detain people,
mm-hmm.
Obama signed the law perfectly, you know, we're pretty happy to sign the law.
You're talking about the NDAA, right?
Yeah, and like you say, it's one hydra with two heads.
Well, and you know, I mean, it's so funny that you should mention that, because I remember talking to some of my friends after the election, and they said, you know, Obama's won.
Yay!
Freedom. He's going to protect us. And you know, I had a friend of mine who, bless her heart, is a nice person, a really nice person. I can't overemphasize this enough. This is not attacking her. She's a really nice person. But good grief, she said, Obama is going to protect Muslims. And, you know, and I posed the question to her. I said, well, you know, he's expanded the drone strikes, the NDAA. He's, you know, invaded even more Muslim countries than Bush has. You know, I'm like,
he'll protect the Al-Qaeda Muslims.
Yeah, he'll protect the Al-Qaeda militants, not the moderates, you know. And so I posed this question to her, and all she could say to me was, instead of taking me on issue for issue, was just, well, I guess you're from the other side. And to be honest, I don't like Romney either. Okay. You know, but it was just like define me as being a Romney.
Caller, why do you think that people don't focus on these issues? Is it because they really only care about the pocketbook issues?
No, I think they're just fanatics. They hold on. Unfortunately, see, everybody is right. The Republicans are right. The Democrats are right. But they hold on to one tiny little truth and throw away all of the other truths on the other side. And that's really the whole problem. People just become this one. Everybody's like a one-issue candidate. Sure, people should work for a living. I mean, that's right. I mean, we all agree.
Right. Who would argue with that? Yeah.
Right. There might be some.
But then it's like no welfare for anybody. Let kids or cripple die. Let houses burn.
Well, you certainly want your opponent associated with those viewpoints, because
that
makes him sound like a nut. Right. But clearly, though, we can't go on the way we're going. As we were mentioned earlier, we spend almost 20% of our GDP on health care. I think we're spending now like $70, $80 billion a year in food stamps, and which, of course, people got to eat, but there's something wrong with the way we're addressing our problems. We need to address them, in a completely different way. We need to...
Reverse trend.
We need to invest in growth, growing our economy, instead of in just spending money that doesn't seem to produce a good, high-paying jobs.
Right. Well, there's three ways. I tell people that all Obama did is copy Republican policies. He kept Bush's war, he kept Bush's tax cuts, and he has RomneyCare as his health care program.
That's right. You know? Yeah, I mean, Obamacare, I mean, there was an easy solution to that problem, and that's Medicare for all. And,
of course.
But I think anybody who wants universal health care knows that, and yet it was off the table from the beginning. He told Dennis Kucinich to take a hike, and so we got this, we took a Rube Goldberg invention, and we made it more complicated, more expensive, and I don't think it's going to work.
Well, the problem is, the big problem was the insurance companies, and this is a sellout to the insurance company. This institutionalizes the insurance
Absolutely.
Company. It's terrible.
It's like you say, we have a problem, and you go to the Obama goes to the insurance companies or Bush Jr., whoever, and they say, what can we do about the problem? What we want a solution.
Well, you give us more money.
You guys can live with it. And the pharmaceutical companies, too. We've got to take care of you guys. So give us a solution you guys like.
Yeah.
Well, you can't run a system that way.
No.
And you know, there's austerity, which doesn't work. treading water, which is basically what Obama does, or growth. And growth is the only answer.
And to have growth, we're going to have to change our priorities a lot. And one of the things we're going to have to give up is the empire. No more empire. We got to go back to the republic and build this country. Caller, thank you so much for joining us on the air on In Context. And we have, our number is 203-336-9756. The name of the show is In Context, where my name is Ken McDermott-Rowe. I'm here with Gus Canavero, my fellow host, and Marshawn McDermott-Rowe, our military affairs commentator. We're on every Monday, except the first Monday from noon to 1 p.m., live public affairs, and we take your calls. And if you'd like to join the conversation, we've been talking about the election and all the ramifications for the welfare of our country. Give us a ring at 203-336-9756. That's 203-336-9756. That's 336-9756. And we'd like to hear what your take is on the election. Maybe you could share with us your personal circumstances. Are you affected by the great joblessness problem in America? What do you think should be done about it? Are you concerned would you be willing to entertain a complete change, say, in our foreign policy, as I suggested earlier, in shutting down the empire and reopening the republic and starting to invest serious money in growing our own economy?
You know, to clarify some libertarian principles, you know, I would classify myself as a classical libertarian, but maybe even more like a progressive libertarian, if there is such a thing.
Yeah,
maybe
populist libertarian.
Maybe I'm the first.
Yeah.
I think things like education, police and fire, infrastructure, I think all of these issues are really broken down to the fact that libertarians want them to be controlled by the states,
yes,
the state that you live in, instead of the central federal government dictating to each state what they can and can't do and what they have money to do.
Take education, for example.
Education, for example. Libertarians want to end the Department of Education. Our first caller said, no public schools. Well, no, I think what they're trying to say is they don't want the federal Department of Education to dictate to the states what they can and can't teach, right?
Because they're the ones. Or to spend lots of money.
Or spend more.
I mean,
money.
It didn't exist until the Carter administration.
And it's not like we've gotten any smarter since
Yeah,
then.
I mean, who would say the public school system in America is better today than it was, say, in the 50s and 60s?
You would really have to.
Right?
And yet, you'd have to dig deep.
And we didn't have a U.S. Department of Education back in the 50s and 60s.
I'd say our athletic programs have gotten better.
Right. Yeah, where does the money go?
Things like, you know, building bridges and highways, expanding the highways. You have to go to the Fed to get a grant so that you can expand your highway. Almost no states have the money on their own, just from their own internal taxation, to build whatever they want. And they have to send that money to the feds, and the feds send it back.
And that brings up an interesting subject we've dealt with on a couple of occasions, which was state public banking.
Yeah.
Which again is a progressive
yeah, sure,
idea, but there is a state public bank, one in this country, and it's a Bank of North Dakota, and it's been operating for a century successfully in North Dakota. Probably no coincidence, has the lowest unemployment in this country, and has, I believe, the only government that with a state balanced budget
surplus.
And this bank works in conjunction with the local lenders. It's not independent of the local banking system, but it goes into development projects with the other local banks.
Yeah, it's not a retail bank.
And it's been very successful in stimulating growth and also helping people in times of catastrophe.
But you know, this last election and the one before, the polarization in this country has really more concreted the idea that the country is too big to be run by a central government. I think that the states really need to take more responsibility for themselves and be dictated to less from the federal government, because you have so much anger directed at different regions. You know, the Northeast does not agree with the Midwest, and the West Coast does not agree with the Southwest. And the anger directed toward each other.
Yes.
The red states and the blue states are so polarized. You know, when Obama wins a state, he wins it like hands down. You know, New York and California.
The country
Jersey
has become very polarized in so many ways.
And they hate each other because they see each other as taking from one another.
Yeah.
Something that rightfully belongs to them. And I think that if we let the states direct themselves more, then we wouldn't have so much anger and vitriol spewed at each other. Like, for example, states who have abortion, they hate the blue state or the red states that don't like abortion, right?
I'm sorry, we actually had, oh, maybe that's him again. We had a caller and he accidentally got disconnected.
All right.
Oh, great. Give us a ring back. We'll put you on the air.
But, I mean, do you see what I'm saying?
Oh, definitely. And I wonder if the bankrupt, and I see the federal government going bankrupt before too long and sometime this decade, what's that going to do? Because if the government, if the central government doesn't have the money to dole out anymore, what's going to keep the regionalism in check in this country? I mean, why would the Northeast continue to carry poor parts of the country?
Yeah, and the central, the more central the government becomes, the more powerful it becomes. It doesn't go the opposite direction.
I believe we have a caller.
And we have a caller from New Haven. Go ahead, sir. You're on the air with WPKN.
Hi. I just, you know, I just have a few comments to make. You know, I'm a libertarian. I voted for Gary Johnson. I didn't think it was a wasted vote.
Yeah, I agree.
We were warned years ago about the two-party system. And, you know, I did watch some of the debates on C-SPAN, the third, fourth, and the Justice. They have the Green Party, the Justice Party. And they had Gary Johnson up there, and they had some great ideas. And, you know, I just think that the problem is that I should open up the newspaper and find no job wanted, no jobs in there. If there's so many people out looking for jobs, then how come there's so many jobs in the paper?
Because the inflation is so out of control that people can't live on most of what these jobs are offering.
Well, I think, caller, if you do ask a young person, as well, what the job situation is, and I have, you know, asked people, recent college graduates, and it is terrible out there. I mean, I think you ask the person who's at the margin, the person who recently entered the workforce, and that's where you find out how good or bad things are. And from what I hear, it's terrible out
there. And especially as long as unemployment checks will continue forever, why should someone take a job that's less than what they were earning
before? You go to the checkout counter at a retail store, and the guy's serving you is maybe a couple years out of college, and he's making maybe $15,000, $16,000, $17,000 a year, doing a job with no future, and that's not what America's about. We got to provide, you know, we got to shake things up here and provide growth and opportunity.
Well, that is true, but this is where we are right now. The caller makes a good point. There are jobs that want employees, and people just aren't willing to take them.
Well,
right. I mean, there's a lot of people that choose not to work, that go on food stamps, or you know, I mean, I think that a lot of those programs we can cut and do away with.
Well, that is a caller. I'm afraid we're going to have to move on, but I really appreciate your points.
We're just coming to the end of the show. We have a couple more calls lined up.
Yeah, thanks for calling, sir.
Thank you.
I did it again. And this is Doug from West Haven. I'm sorry, sir. I lost my note somewhere. But Doug, go ahead.
Doug, you're on the air with In Context.
Hello, guys. How are you today?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Okay, it's North Haven, but that's okay.
North Haven.
It's one of the havens.
Whatever. I'm sorry, I always get it mixed up.
Sorry, buddy. So it's not South Haven, you know? the comments that I'm having, I voted for Obama. I didn't want to see the other gentleman. I call him an idiot, but he's a gentleman in the power. I can't imagine him with his finger on the button. Uh-huh. We've all grown up with the fear of nuclear war hanging over our heads. I mean, I'm 60, so I've grown up with it from the 50s. And too many people rely on the government to be its say-all and with-all. You know, Kennedy said, do what you can do for the government, not what the government can do for you, was very smart. You know, we don't have to make the government the catch-all. You know, and by the way, I keep hearing the government's broke. They keep printing money. They keep throwing money out there. They keep lowering taxes. How do they do that?
I think it has to do with
the Fed.
I think also because the U.S. dollar is still the world's reserve currency.
People are forced to take it.
So all the other central banks have to have chestfuls of it. But the day will come when it won't be the world's reserve currency anymore. And I shudder to think what's going to happen to our deficits.
For the time being, the country could start printing our money on toilet paper and just like, you know, pulling it off of a ream and just saying, hey, other countries, you got to accept this
money. I think another reason is that all the money they've been creating has really been going to fill the black hole that's the bank's balance sheets. And it hasn't been getting into the hands of ordinary people.
Mm-hmm.
So it's
right.
not,
well,
we don't, you know.
We'll have the cliche of walking around with wheelbarrows full of money to pay for a loaf of bread.
And Doug, I do agree that I would say that's probably the only legitimate reason to not to vote for Obama is that you think that Romney is a war hawk. And I agree because the way that he talked about he and Netanyahu are like
buddies,
childhood buddies, you know, and that he's going to defend them no matter what. Well, I'm sorry. I just don't accept that. That's not good enough for me. And that is probably the best example or reason to vote for Obama, I think.
thank you for addressing my comments. Move on. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Doug. And I believe we have another caller, Marchand.
Yes, we have Jacqueline from, I'm sorry, I'm doing so many things.
That's all right. Don't apologize.
Go ahead, Jacqueline. You're on the air with WPKN.
Hi, Jacqueline.
Hi. My question about the election results and what the future will bring has to do with healthcare and Obamacare. And what I'm wondering is, how will Obamacare affect the actual quality of healthcare in this country? It may make it accessible to more people, but how do you guys think it will and can improve primary care and disease prevention in this country?
Yeah, go ahead, guys.
I have a quick anecdote. All right, yesterday I was talking to someone who whose wife works in a primary care clinic, right? A little practice. And she was saying that when people come in for birth control pills, they're forced to cover it under Medicaid and other low-cost health insurance premiums. But they've reduced the amount of payout to only $29, which is actually beneath the cost for the clinic to buy the birth control pills. So when people come in with this government-mandated health insurance and they want birth control pills, they just say that they're out of stock.
Yeah, I think that's a really good question, Jacqueline, because and we did a show on Obamacare, and we worked over the numbers, and it just doesn't seem to work. We spend, I think over $3 trillion a year in healthcare now, almost a fifth of the American economy. And as he raises the Medicaid limit, because he did want to include more people, and that's great. We shouldn't have uninsured in this
country.
That's
a nice thought.
Okay, we should everybody should be covered. But as you increase it, and you create these subsidized private policies that are going to be obtained through the supposedly state-run, brokerages or whatever.
Uh-huh.
Exchanges. And they're, each of those is going to be heavily subsidized. They haven't addressed the cost problem. How is this going to work out except through rationing? If you've got a system that's spending too much money right now, I don't see how it's quality has to go down.
And will doctors even accept it?
I mean, like
the story I just told. They just said they don't have it.
I mean, as we mentioned earlier, Medicare for All was a rational solution, but the insurance companies didn't like that.
I mean, that would play into the same thing of they would drive down the cost of the reimbursement so low that doctors would just stop providing
maybe,
care.
Maybe, but at least with a single payer, and get the insurance companies the heck out of it. Do we have another caller?
No, I was just saying 2 minutes.
Jacqueline, we just have a couple more minutes. Is there one more comment you'd like to make before we have to go off the air?
That was a really great answer. I think that's all my questions.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much for calling, Jacqueline.
Yeah, thank you
very
much.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And you can always, if you think of anything else, tune in next week and call us.
That's right. We will be on.
You can email us, too, and we'll address it in between shows.
And
we are going to be back in 1 week with Stuart Rhodes, who is the founder and the head of this organization called Oath Keepers, which are military, it's a voluntary group of soldiers, firemen, policemen, people in uniform services primarily, and veterans as well, mm-hmm. who have taken a pledge that they will not enforce unconstitutional orders such as the NDAA, which we've discussed today.
Killing American citizens, the sole discretion of the president.
And it's hard to believe, but the president signed a law which gives him the authority to have the military to arrest American citizens and put them in military custody based on some supposed association with Islamic radicals.
Potential enemy combatants.
This is real scary.
Which goes above and beyond. It's just really anybody you remotely suspect of even morally supporting.
I mean, the three of us in this room would probably qualify.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt, because we disparage the government. Defeatist attitude sounds similar to Stalin's Russia.
If you want to reach us, incontextreport.com is our website. Visit us, see our videos on the YouTube channel at the In Context channel.
Mm-hmm. And Facebook as well. Facebook. Like us there. And you can email us in between if you want to talk to us, and it's ken@mdrtalk.org. All right, and we will see you again next week.
And stay tuned for Rick Petrone, who's coming up next with jazz.
Take it easy, folks.
FM in Bridgeport and online at WPKN.org. Thank you. If you appreciate the tuning so much, I hope you'll enjoy the playing more. Thank you.
Programming support for WPKN comes from The Blue Parrot.